January 24, 2018. It's the Watt from Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Watt from Pedro Show, January 24th. Brother Matt, unexpectedly, had a buddy pass away and had to go to funeral. So I'm in Pedro here, not completely man alone, because the wonder of Skype, the engineers over in Estonia, I'm connected to John Herden. Where are you calling from? You're in SoCal, right?
Yeah, I live in Eagle Rock these days. Northeast side.
Yeah, well, I had a great, I still do, but he lives in New York City. And Nels Klein lived there for quite a while.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and Carla Bozlich. So I've been there a few times. It's kind of neat. It's a little, I haven't played a record store. I can't remember the name with Seb and the Radics. It's a neat little enclave, like Pasadena almost.
Yeah, I mean, my kid's mom lives in Altadena. Actually, Jeff Parker lives in Altadena also now.
More east.
These days. Yeah, east side.
Yeah, that used to be Dairyland. When I first came to California, that was dairies.
The Altadena Dairy, yeah. You can still drink the milk.
Okay, and also there was a lot of the space. There's colleges there, Claremont. It's funny, there's Claremont and Montclair.
right. Occidental College is right around the corner here, too, I think.
That's right. JPL, I'm thinking more Caltech, JPL, the space things were there. I think Jonathan Latham was teaching out there, too. Anyway, to get from there to Pedro, that's some traffic. Eagle Rock, not as bad. Just make your way to the Harbor Freeway. So, John, we got to both thank Brother Stevie for Connect, because you know I've been a fan of your band for so long. Me and Kay once, and this is going way back, but before Jeff was with you, we were on a tune called Corn Pone.
Yeah.
Kind of a remix thing, and we just ended up putting our own basses on it.
Yeah, man. That's totally
really strange. It was a long time ago, but I think it was Via Doug, your bass man.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. For that first record.
Right. Can we get personal with you? Can you? What's your furthest back music memory?
Wow, furthest back music memory.
While you're thinking, I should tell people we start off the show with John Coltrane doing After the Crescent, and then you with Tortoise doing 10-Day Interval.
Wow. Cool, thanks.
So, you know, just something that relate to music that you can go, you know, some guys can remember back to 2 and shit. I can't.
Yeah, you know, my parents were music fans, and there was always music around the house.
You mean by fans, like they're more listeners than players?
Listeners, not players. Yeah. Although, I grew up on a commune. I was in, I had like kind of a, anyway, I moved to this commune when I was about 5, in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
That's kind of the city.
Yeah, right in the city, on Green Street.
You're thinking commune, you're thinking more like out in the country.
Well, we eventually moved to the country in like 76. My folks bought some land in North Carolina, so we moved to Western North Carolina. But before that, we were living in Cambridge, and you know, my favorite band at the time, me and my brother hung out with these other kids, the Chasons, Tommy and John Chason, and we were super into The Who. So we were just like, you know, listening to like Meaty Beaty Big and Bouncy. Oh, yeah. Tommy had just come out. We were like going to see that in the theaters all the time.
You mean the Ken Russell movie?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, totally amazing. I think I saw it like probably like 8 times in the theater when it came out.
What about nowadays? Isn't it kind of lame?
Super weird. I mean, you know, for sure. I think that, but I don't know. There's a beautiful charm. I could watch
You know what weirded me out?
I could watch Keith Moon of course, all day long. So,
but what weirded me out was John Entwistle redid the bass, and it's like kind of, you know what I mean, for the soundtrack. Yeah, it's like kind of, I don't know, gay porn music. Nothing wrong with that, but it kind of was strange versus Tommy.
Right.
I guess Tommy yeah. feel me. So your earliest memory is the Who.
So we're super into the Who. My uncle promises me and my friend Tommy to tickets to go see the Who.
Oh, wow.
For Christmas. So he bagged out and doesn't produce the tickets.
Oh.
My friend Tommy goes, sees the gig. Keith Moon passes out like second song or something, and so they give everybody rain checks to go see the Who again. So my dad, I guess, felt bad. So he got me and my brother tickets to go see the Stones with Stevie Wonder opening up at Boston Gardens. And I guess that was maybe like 74, 75, something like that. So I think it was like Goat's Head Soup era. And I remember seeing that gig, but you know, something happened. The Stones were late for the gig. I don't know, like Stevie Wonder played extra long. And then I just remember like going home and just like checking out my parents' Stevie Wonder collection and just really just kind of listening to those records on repeat.
Whoa. And now Commune or maybe some guitars laying around, but you end up a drummer man. So was it drum circles?
No, there were no drum circles. My folks were like, they were like hand weavers and craftspeople mostly. My mom's an architect. My dad left when I was young moved out here. I actually went for a year of high school in Los Angeles in 83.
What part?
I went to University High.
Okay, uni.
I went to uni, yeah. So, and that was great because there, unfortunately, I never saw you play during that year that I was here, but I was here 83, 84, but I did see Circle Jerks and Black Flag and a lot of great bands, Battalion of Saints,
San Diego. That was like one of the only bands out of that town then. They didn't have a lot going on then.
I got to see Blood on the Saddle at the Cafe de Grand, which is cool.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I saw
Boom, we put out their first record.
Yeah, yeah. You did?
Yeah, we did.
Oh,
it was Big Boom's idea.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Greg and Annette Zelenka, she had quit the Bangs.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And a cat named Herman on the drums, I remember. And Ron on the bass stand-up. How did you do music at school?
I did, man. You know, I tried to... There was no band in our school during elementary school, but in high school. But they brought the band for like one of my last years of elementary school to the school for recruits for the high school band.
The marching band?
Yeah, for the marching band. So I was like, yeah, I want to be a drummer. And they're like, oh, too many drummers. You play clarinet. So I played clarinet for a year. I was like, all right, okay, if this gets me in the door.
Yeah.
So, and then, right around then, I started taking private lessons outside of school, on the drums and learned enough how to read and stuff that I went and auditioned for a drum chair and I got like a snare drum marching position.
All right.
Yeah.
Here, I want to play something from the Poster Children.
Okay.
Are you? To a small college in Ohio. He was a music major. It was in the 60s when students were rebels against society. He played his own small part, though his action was limited and unclear. It all began on the road. He drove back to New York now and then for weekends and on Thanksgiving, Christmas, Easter, and summer vacations. It was a long drive, more than 10 hours. The car was usually packed with students from the New York area. They'd pull off the turnpike 3 or 4 times during the trip. The service areas featured Howard Johnson's restaurants. They'd sit at the counter before placemats illustrated with puzzles, mazes, optical illusions, and information about birds, coins, birthstones, famous ships, and flowers of the season. On the mirror facing them were the names of more than 50 ice creams. He liked to make fun of the selection by asking for even more exotic flavors. He'd say, "Could I please have a broccoli mint apple pie cobbler? I think I'd prefer the orange sunburst chicken nut fudge crunch. I'd like to try the pistachio fried egg okra delight with dehydrated applesauce topping and stewed lungs, please. Could you do that for me?" His friends thought he was a wit. They laughed at almost everything he said. On the counter, brownies wrapped in cellophane were displayed on platters. And it started as an accident. He took a brownie and meant to pay for it at the cash register. But when he was outside, walking to the car, he realized he'd forgotten. Rather than go back, he unfolded the cellophane and ate it. At the next service area, he stole a few more brownies to share with his friends. At the third stop, he borrowed a purse from one of the girls, held it in his lap at the counter near the display platter, filled it with about a dozen brownies, then passed it back to her. And finally, just outside New York, he emptied an entire platter of brownies into his book bag. The restaurants were so busy and understaffed that no one noticed. He and his friends went back to the car and shared the take. But they could only eat so many. The brownies were terribly rich, and he soon found himself with a surplus. By the time they completed the round trip to and from New York, he'd accumulated about 50. So he began to collect them. He thought he'd build something out of them, but he didn't know what. All he knew was that he needed more of them. So whenever he went out for a drive off campus, he'd stop at local Howard Johnson's restaurants to steal as many brownies as he could. And eventually, over a period of a few months, he amassed 2 steamer trunks filled with brownies. The brownies got hard and stale, but they didn't rot. He had them neatly banded together, the way they stack money in bank heist movies. And his brownie collection became famous. Students from all over the campus came to look at it. But after a while, the brownies began to stink up his room. The odor of stale chocolate was in his clothes, in his shoes, in his hair. Finally, he decided to get rid of them. But he didn't want to just throw them out. He wanted to do something whimsical, original, and inspiring, to continue to feed his reputation as a campus legend. And then he got an idea. He'd return them. So he put one of the suitcases in the trunk of his car. And every time he stopped at a Howard Johnson's, he'd fill the pockets of his shirt, jacket, and pants with brownies, walk in, sit down at the counter, and during the meal, slowly empty his pockets, adding his own brownies to those already on the platters in front of him. Soon everyone knew of his project, and he was the talk of the college. They thought it was a great idea, and they were all behind him. The Thanksgiving vacation went well. He managed to return half a suitcase of brownies because he and his friends stopped at every service area coming and going between Cleveland and New York. Then at Christmas, the tradition of the brownie platters was discontinued. They arrived at the first Ohio Howard Johnson's rest stop, his pockets filled with the dry, hard brown tablets. But the platters were gone. He was stunned. Then he saw the brownies had been moved to the candy counter in front of the cash register. They were stacked neatly in racks. It was too risky to try adding his stolen brownies to the stack in front of the cashier, so he sat down at the counter and ordered dinner. He ate everything and polished his plate with his napkin. Then, with the plate in his lap, he piled all his brownies, Howard Johnson style, on it, put it on the counter, paid for his dinner, and left. At the next plaza, his friends helped him. They argued with the cashier about what they said was an overcharge, while he reached into the deep, fully loaded pockets of his overcoat to return dozens of more stale brownies to the shelves. And when they left, the brownies had spread over the caramello bars and the maple sugar people and the lollipops. By that summer, he managed to return every brownie he'd stolen. And it wasn't long before Howard Johnson's restaurants were converted into cafeterias with pre-cooked food lined up in trays in front of you, and they installed pay toilets and replaced the paper towels with those cheap blow dryers. And not long after that, you saw them closing down, being boarded up and razed. And although he knew it was because of the expanding fast food industry, the McDonald's, the Kentucky Fried Chicken outlets, the Burger Kings, Hardee's, Roy Rogers, Pizza Huts, and all the rest, he felt somehow that he'd personally contributed to it all, that he'd played his small part in the decline of a great American institution. Sometimes, going down the river at night, you'll see in a clearing on a hill a house with an orange roof and turquoise shutters, looking like a cross between a summer cottage and a doll's house. An old whore in a negligee, lounging in the doorway, whispering.
Pedro show. Yeah, that was outside in for the poster children. You were just telling me you were living in Chicago at the time, and they were Champaign Urbana Band.
They were, yeah. They had a great drummer, this guy Bob Rising, who plays on their first couple records, or maybe I don't. He might just be on the. Anyway, they had a record on Twin Tone out of Minneapolis called Flower Plower. Or no, maybe the record was called Daisy Chain Reaction.
Yeah, yeah. Twin anyway, Tone, I think.
I saw them open for Mudhoney in Chicago.
By the way, they're working on a new album.
Mudhoney is?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Anyway, sorry.
No. And I don't know. I think like Steve Albini had seen the band that I was in at the time. It was a band called Precious Wax Drippings. We put out a few records, a couple records, and knew that Poster Kid Children were looking for a drummer and suggested them that, and so we met up and it seemed like a good connection, and then made this record, Tool of the Man, that was on Warner Reprise, and then just did like, I don't know, about 18 months of touring, pretty much nonstop. I was on the road, but kind of around the time that was when Doug and I started playing around with the idea of making some songs for a band that eventually became Tortoise.
Doug McCombs.
Yeah, Doug McCombs.
Who was in Seventh Day Dream Day?
11th. He was That's in 11th. 11th Dream Day. Yeah.
I'm sorry, my memory. I've done a bunch of gigs with them.
Yeah, that band is still going, still putting out records on Thrill Jockey.
Oh, wow, great.
Yeah.
So that's like the seeds of Tortoise.
So, yeah, so it seemed to me like the writing on the wall with the Poster Children, because of what they wanted to do, was just make a record and then go on tour and play, like, you know, 300 shows in a year or something, which is cool, but I had my started this other musical project with Doug, and I didn't want to be on tour and in doing that. I really wanted to work with my friends in Chicago. And
we should back up a little bit. The Wax Drippings.
Yeah.
How'd that band get? That's a Chicago band, right?
Yeah.
So how do you get from that, your buddy talking about the Who gig in Massachusetts over to, and that, well, there was a little break in L.A., over to Chicago?
Yeah, I moved to Chicago in January of 85. I graduated high school from Uni High in 84, and went back to North Carolina for the summer, and was working, like, bussing tables and playing in a little cover in a covers band that I was actually in through a lot of high school. Some people who had a covers band that were friends of my parents asked me when I was about 15 if I wanted to be the drummer in this band. So we were, it was kind of fun through high school, like playing bars and hotels and like weddings, not so much of that, but more just like we had like a regular bar gig.
Okay.
And that was fun. And it was like a lot of 60s and 50s rock and roll. But we also did some like Les Paul and Mary Ford tunes and some originals. So
what made you want to go to Chicago?
Well, so during the summer that I was in North Carolina, I met someone who was from Asheville, the little town outside of where I grew up, that I was living in, who was going to school in Chicago, and we just became friends. And I said, if there's ever space in your place and you're looking for a roommate, I'm looking to get out of Asheville and try to do something. So around the next year,
North Carolina has Asheville, South Carolina has Ashland, right? They're both in the
West. I don't know about Ashland.
I spaced on that because Warren Haynes is from one of those towns.
Okay.
I think Warren it's Haynes. The South one. Ashland.
Right?
Yeah, but by memory. That's really interesting. So just by chance friendship, you got tugged into Chicago. I should say that rest of music. God Out West from SS Space Systems, Substitute 11, an Educational Nightmare, Teleplay, Guided by Voices. Joe Frank with Howard Johnson's Brownies. And finally, Star Liquor. You're doing some straight ahead, the Orange Blossom.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, this is stuff you flowed me. I asked you. It's kind of a diverse thing. So that's very interesting. Yeah. So you go there. You got a new roommate. You're in a big fucking town.
Yeah.
And you find these wax stripping guys.
I just kind of moved up into the city. I was living in just a few blocks away from Wrigley Field.
Clark Street.
And moved in with a bunch of people who were art students and musicians, and just kind of fell into a little bit of a music scene, and I lived not far from the Cabaret Metro too, which is right there. So yeah. I was going to a lot of shows, and actually Bill Little from Precious Wax Drippings just approached me on the street and was like, hey, heard you're a drummer. We got a band. We're looking for a drummer. You want to come and play? And their practice space was three blocks from where I lived. So I got on my skateboard and shredded over there and then we...
What about drum kit? You had drum kit. Did you bring from North Carolina?
Absolutely, yeah. I had a little Slingerland kit.
Yeah.
I was rocking.
What'd you bring? A station wagon?
Say what?
Station wagon?
You know what? I mailed them up because I drove up in my friend's old Volkswagen Carmen Ghia.
Carmen Ghia? Yeah. You're not getting a drum kit in a Carmen Ghia.
No way. No.
I've seen dudes do it with a bug, but not a Carmen Ghia. Georgie did it with a fucking TR-6, 250.
Oh, yeah.
Also a GT6. Yeah, a little hatchback. Somehow, he used a golf sack and shit like that.
Whatever it takes, I think you're going to get the drums there.
Do you remember the first Precious Wax Drippings gig?
Whoa, first gig. No, I have no idea. Okay. That's fucked up.
Yeah. Hey, it happens, man. I've forgotten more shit than the universe contains. I
mean, you remember the first Minutemen gig?
I kind of do.
Yeah?
Yeah, I don't have the date right. It keeps changing. But, it was with Flag and the Vanguard Art Gallery up in L.A. with... I think middle class too, and it was Flag without Keith had quit. So, but he was there, and Spot was singing Louie, and that
shit.
Weird guy in that Decline movie, Mike Marine, he punches him out, or X-Head, maybe it's X-Head, one of those two weirdos. I hope they're better now, but they used to be violent, and they punched Spot out, and. I remember hearing some asshole, I don't know who it was, say, Louie's a white man song, which was so bizarre. What? So I remember shit like that. Yeah, because Richard Berry wrote a black man.
Yeah.
And it's about a guy, maybe kind of like a, I don't know, Limbo Caribbean kind of thing. Yeah. It's just funny. I can remember some things, but I can't remember others. I can't remember most of my teachers in school.
You can't remember what?
Most of the teachers I had in school.
Right.
Professors, anything of that shit. I remember a couple, but not much. I just asked that because, you know, the first of anything is kind of, for me, they're always scary, so I was wondering. Well, look, we're coming to the end of the first hour, so next hour, I'm going to let you think about it in advance. If you can remember the first tortoise gig.
Okay.
We're at the end of the first hour, January 24th, 2018, edition of the Watt from Peebo Show. Special guest John Hernan with me. People, hold tight for hour two.
But I needed to get my my bloodborne pathogens credentials to know that I knew how to handle them. So I did the class in Pedro. And actually, while I was driving through Pedro, I was totally like, man, I wonder if Watt's around. I wonder.
Totally. Well, if I wasn't on tour, I probably was.
I was looking for you lurking, man, but I didn't see you.
Okay, hey, we're January 24, 2018. It's the second hour of the Watt from Peebo Show.
骄傲的就是他的妈妈，小时候最喜欢扑在妈妈的怀里，最幸福的时间就是生日的时候，妈妈给他做完最心爱的羊肉面。有一天他听了一首 Rocking Blue 的歌，把他的生活完全来改变。买吉他不回家，一起去玩 Rocking Blue。要成功不再要妈妈辛苦的生活。小鹿你真不知道幸福究竟是什么，妈妈最幸福的就是看你真的样子。你回家吧，困难的时候回家，妈妈给你做最喜欢的呀。
Yeah. 情三大黑九幺三小宝贝苦中啊未知啊有你妈的门也去落几杯上修的心子啊有你来猜
ejaculate to sky. Ejaculate to sky full of star. Then you see me too. That's mine.
And then, now with you, Derek, the star nonsense. Now, which is it?
Show, we started off the second hour with Tortoise doing the name of a synthesizer over there, John McIntyre guy. It's called Xinjiang Hechen Chi. So
yes,
yeah. And then we had P. And then I played some. You know, I was there in March for the first time. 10 months.
And ago. Where did you go?
Well, it was mainly just in the east and northeast. You know, so most of them were around the Shanghai area, some Beijing.
Oh, wow.
12 gigs in 22 days. I got to play with some bands, and they gave me some music. So we played PK-14, which is the old timers for those guys. Ice Age. Street Kill Strange Animals. I played with them in Beijing. Vortex. A Buoy with Mutton Soup, Noodle Soup. The Top Floor Circus with the Pram and the Wheelchair. Pumpkins. Starry, Starry Night. I had to edit out about 3 minutes. They put 3 minutes of silence in the middle of the tune. I thought people wouldn't get that.
Huh. Weird.
Well, John Cage, you know, they're learning. You can tell that she's a dud by the fact she has a photo of her nephew as the background on her phone, and that's by Round Eye. And they're Laowais, which means foreigner. And they're coming to tour the U.S. or coming back home. I think they're bringing a China guy on guitar the next month. You can't remember the first Precious Wax Drippings, but can you remember the first Tortoise gig?
Yeah, for sure. We were supposed to open for the X from
Holland?
from the Dutch group, the yeah. X. With Tom Cora was playing with them at the time.
With on the cello and shit.
Yeah.
Incredible cat.
So I mean, we were totally incredibly excited about the gig, and somehow the X guys were on tour in Canada, and they got held up at the border, and they wouldn't let them in to the country. So the people at the venue, rather than canceling the gig, said, "Why don't you guys just want to play, and we'll just make it a free show." So unfortunately, we didn't get to see or play with the X at that time, though we've played a bunch with them since then. But it meant that, like, just a ton of our friends showed up, and we played, and it was super, super fun and totally nerve-wracking. And
we should talk about the band. Now, you and Doug started it. How did you fill it up with the other cats?
Doug and I had just booked some time at the studio that was run by Brad Wood, who's a producer and recording engineer and a great drummer. He was in the band Shrimp Boat back in the day.
You booked some time, just you and Doug.
Just Doug and I. We were going to try to record a few songs. About, I don't know, maybe like a couple days before we were going into the studio, John was hanging out with Bundy.
Bundy Brown, great cat.
Bundy Brown, and who was in the band Bastro with John McIntyre at the time. So Bundy and John show up to the studio, and we're like, you guys should play on this material, and that's kind of how the band was started.
Yeah, this is called Bumps.
Oh yeah, this is just McIntyre and Dan Bitney and I. We put this record out on Stone's Throw a bunch of years ago.
Okay.
Thank you. ביום השבת, הפסקת אש. החיים פולטים הנחתם ומתיישבים בצל עצי הזית. הפצועים נושכים את שפתם עד זוב דם. ואילו המתים צועקים, נגמר, אפשר לצאת, וקוראים בציפורניים פרועות את האפר הקשה, עליו יושבים החיים וממוללים רגבים יבשים בציפורניים מלוכלכות.
Watt from Pedro show. Started off with a safe bomb from the Bumps. Shy Talk after that. Joel up at the Clooney. Jordy guy. What's it called? Newcastle. Yeah. I always got to remember that Humble Pie there. With Warlord of the Dance. He's got a new band, Shy Talk. Then Frog Hair out of Houston with Honey, You've Been on My Mind. Faya, Beat It Out. There's Houston also. DMF from behind Orange County. Banger. Jonas Williams from Australia. Judy Davis, 1518 out of Italy with Russian Alpinism. Maldivisa, España, Sea of Limbs. Farther south out of Israel with On the Seventh Day. And finally, Five Style, Deep Marsh. What's Five Style about there, John?
Five Style was a group that was mostly about this kid, Bill Dolan's songs. Bill was a kid from Rockford, Illinois, moved to Chicago, we started playing mostly when we first got together. We were just kind of, we were really into like the Meters. And so
George Porter.
We were into the Meters, but we were also into like, you know, De Kruijzen. And,
oh, yeah. Washington.
And the Tar Babies. We were.
Oh, yeah, Bucky Pope.
Yeah. So
new band that been playing his music.
We love, like, the Beat Boys and, you know.
And Dirt.
Yeah. So
a little funky thing.
I was just kind of trying to figure out how to.
Not so much power chords on the guitar.
Play and have like a percolating kind of sensibility.
Yeah. The amazing about Zigaboo, where he could put the kick drum anywhere he fucking wants.
Oh my God, man.
You know, yeah. Who's like that too is Brendan and Fugazi.
Totally.
Put the kick drum wherever he wants. You know? I remember Georgie once told me when I asked him about some kick drum placement, he said, don't you understand kick drum is just something I put in between everything else?
Right.
Yeah, he said it was like playing drums to him was like juggling on your tailbone. And the worst thing, that's why we call that record Live Totem, worst thing if you didn't get to the head before the gig, he said it was like, like the metaphor was twofold because it was like it was pounding inside of you, and then the faces on the totem pole was like your faces dealing with that. We come to the end of the second hour, 2018 edition of Wap Pito Show. Special guest John Herden. Hold tight for hour three. January 24, 2018. It's the third hour of the Lot for Pedro show. Thank you.
smash it to the wall.
For Pedro show start off the third hour with Tortoise doing Magnet Pulls Through. That makes sense. David Gerard out of Massachusetts doing Entrance Music Part 1-4. Five Style. Another one. Deep Marsh. Fuck, I played it twice. You must have sent it to me a second time.
So nice, I had to play it.
That's how fucking happening that tune is. I don't think I've ever, in the 16 years, almost 500 shows, ever played the same song in the same show. But you know, John, you deserve it. You and your guys, John McIntyre. By the way, Tom Watson told me this years ago that your nickname is Johnny Machine.
Yeah.
Were you into Jackie? Because wasn't that his nickname too?
You know what, man? It's actually like just a play on Frankie Machine from The Man with the Golden Arm.
Frank Sinatra.
Like, I mean, he plays the character, but in the book, the Nelson Algren book, it's the character's name is Frankie Machine.
That's right.
And he's like, you know, he lives in Chicago in the neighborhood that I was living in at the time. And the character in the book is a junkie who really wants to be a drummer.
Yeah.
And I was not a junkie, but I was playing with a bunch of people at the time who were just read a lot and kind of had this like sort of theater literature kind of art thing going, and they were like, everybody in the band had a nickname, and they were like, yours is going to be Johnny Machine. So it just kind of stuck.
Okay. But what about influences? You were talking about Keith Moon. Was Jackie one of your...
I'm sorry, man. Are you talking about Jack DeJohnette?
He's still around. But no, we lost Jackie last year. He played drums for Can.
I'm sorry, Jackie Leibitz.
Yeah,
Leibitz.
Love.
Man, you know, I do like Jackie, but I never really dug too far into that stuff. Somehow it was just kind of...
No, that's okay. Who was some of your influences? Don Bowles. Robo.
I mean, I for sure love Robo.
I love those roles in Police Story. Yeah. They all speed up.
Man, who influences? Dang.
Well, there probably was some from John McIntyre just playing with him.
for sure.
Or maybe you were learning his ass. Or maybe it was two-way street.
Man, you know who I super loved was Ray Washam.
Oh, sure, sure, Texas.
Yeah, I really loved his playing on the Big Boys record.
Big Boys. He was also in the Buttholes.
The cafeteria. He was
Scratch he was Acid?
Scratch Acid.
Yeah.
He was in Scratch Acid. I love that dude.
What about this? Because we also played Screw from the Hard Girls and then Rest for the Wicked from Isotope 217. How did, that's with Jeff, right? He was a later member of Taurus.
Yeah, that's with Jeff.
Well, tell me the story.
With Isotope?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that record, or that band started out just from jam sessions that we were having around Chicago, and just kind of like usual suspects who would be showing up at the session, and often it was Dan and Rob and Jeff. So we were just kind of like playing at different people's houses, having a lot of sessions, playing free music. You know, we were super into like whatever, Coltrane.
I like that.
Coltrane and Ornette Coleman and Art Ensemble of Chicago and just kind of like listening to a lot of
But when you say something like whatever, I'm thinking Paul Lynn, Charles Nelson Reilly, you know,
right?
Carol Channing.
So we asked these people at this bar, the Rainbow Club. Actually, you know what? Dose played the Rainbow, and I was bartending at the time when you guys played.
Blew out my knee, right?
Blew out your knee. I gave you a big shot of Maker's Mark from the bar.
Thank you. Because I was hurting really bad.
Yeah, I had actually seen your show earlier with Firehose.
Run West and Run.
And then I jumped over for my shift at the Rainbow Club, and then you came up. You came later and played too, which is awesome. Totally amazing. So that's Isotope started. We played every Monday at the Rainbow Club for like 2 years before we ever recorded a record.
Oh wow, that's right.
And so that was just from that, just like a place to play. We would show up every Monday and just play two sets, starting from at 8 o'clock and end at 11. And we would just improvise mostly, just two sets.
Doesn't Jeff got something like that happening now in SoCal?
He does. He plays pretty regularly. There's a place in Highland Park called the ETA, Club ETA, and he's playing there on a regular with this really great bass player, Anna Butters. Joey Belarus is a great drummer, is playing with him, I think, a lot. Josh Johnson is playing alto sax with him a bunch.
Wow. Well, let's listen to some Isotope 217 here. This is called New Beyond.
Thank you. see. I don't know where you're going to go. Let's look at baby.
Thank you.
Okay, last music for this edition, New Beyond from Isotope 217. From Osaka, the Bronx. We were talking about boredoms. Fuck Girl Cops. Birds of Paradise out of Canada with River No Return. Yeah, I think Montreal. And then finally, Moster, Parker, Abrams, and Herndon with Pajama Jazz. Now, this has some kind of connect with Star Liquor?
No, I guess not. That was mostly...
Because we didn't talk about Star Liquor. How did Star Liquor happen?
Star Liquor happened because I was playing with this group led by Rob from Isotope.
Sure.
Rob Mazurek from Isotope. After Isotope split up, Rob started up a large group, the Exploding Star Orchestra, and asked me to perform with them. So I played some gigs with them and made a record, and then Rob just kind of started forming smaller groups from the larger orchestra. And Star Liquor was just one of the splinter groups.
The core, yeah.
So yeah, Star Liquor is me and Jason Adashevitz, vibraphonist, and Rob Trio, vibes, cornet, and drums.
Okay. And what about this band that did Pajama Jazz?
So that was actually, Jeff and I had a regular weekly gig with Josh Abrams, who plays bass on that record, in Chicago. And this dude, Kjetil Moster, who is a Norwegian tenor player, was in town and was friends of friends and knew that Jeff and Josh and I were playing this gig, and he was in town and asked if he could come and sit in. So he came to the gig and sat in, and I guess he dug it. Because he asked us to come to Norway and make this record with him, so he flew us out and we
with the big town Oslo.
We played at the Oslo Jazz Fest with him, and then recorded 3 days, and then he made the record from edits of what we had recorded. Right. It was just all free playing.
Yeah,
know?
Sure. But what a righteous cat to do that.
Yeah,
that's
man.
What's great about music and the connects. John, what's your future? What's your plans? Right, you got coming up.
I have two kids, so I'm hanging out with the kids a lot these days. School is totally in effect.
What about recording?
No recording plans right now. Hopefully something will come up. We got some Tortoise gigs coming up next year. It's just kind of really quiet right now for me. I'm also an illustrator and a painter. So I've been getting some work doing some illustrating and some painting.
Where can people see and hear your stuff? Do you have a website?
I do. You can check it out. It's agrapedope.com. But it's been a long time since I've actually updated any of the visual artwork up there. You can hear some of my stuff. Like, I got a SoundCloud. It's just a grape dope.
And people, that's agrapedope.com.
Yes. Yeah, and then there's I got a Big Cartel page if you want to buy a painting. It's just agrapedope.com/Big Cartel. And then there's a SoundCloud, agrapedope. Agrapedope was the name. I came up with that name because one of the first dudes that I ever played music with was this kid, Alan Kirkpatrick, in North Carolina. We would just kind of play like AC/DC tunes and stuff, and it was in Western North Carolina, and it was very Appalachian dialect going on there, and the dope was the name for like a soda pop. So you'd stop at the country store and people would be like, like Alan, who just loved grape soda, would be like, "Hey Johnny, man, get me a grape dope." and then poor Alan, man, lost his life our last year of high school. Yeah, ended up in an accident, and but you know, he's like one of the first dudes that I played music with, so it's just kind of like an homage to
Very
the creative
John.
Spirit and my man. So
big love. Yeah. One last thing: if somebody asked you advice about this music record, what would you tell
them? I would say, dig deep in your heart and pull it out from there.
Oh, that's great. It's beautiful. It's a huge honor for me to get to talk to you, John. Thank you so much for being on the show.
I've been such a huge fan of everything that you do for so long. Thank you. It's been such an insanely awesome honor to be here with you.
That's really kind of you. I want you to keep on keeping on. Maybe you got to take a break right now for the little ones.
But, okay.
You know, the second win, it'll be coming up.
Hell yeah.
Everybody out there, it's been January 24, 2018. Just a Pedro show. My special guest, John Herden. Everybody out there. Keep your powder dry.